Observatory. I'm Sandy Wood.
El colectivo Raíces presenta su programa
Espejos de Aztlán.
Información,
arte,
cultura.
Bienvenidos.
Y bienvenidos a su programa Espejos de Aztlán. Esta tarde vamos a tener una especial invitada, la profesora y doctora Irene Vázquez. She's the director of UNM Chicana and Chicano Studies programs, and today she visits us as the co-author of Making Aztlán, o Haciendo Aztlán. Dr. Irene Vázquez, this afternoon with you on Espejos de Aztlán.
So we welcome Irene Vázquez. Thank you so much for coming this afternoon on Espejos de Aztlán.
Thank you for inviting me, Cristina.
We are inviting you because there is this particular book that I was seeing, Making Aztlán, as we are Espejos de Aztlán, the longest running public affairs show. Founded by Chicano people, in our case was Ercilio García Camarillo. And your book is about Making Aztlán and the Chicano movement during the 1960s and 70s. A book with co-author Juan Gómez Quiñones, released this year by the University of New Mexico Press. So with this book, I was wondering if the Chicano and the Chicana movement is still alive, and if there is a future, or even if there is a present for it. Let's begin. Who were these people? Who is a Chicano and or a Chicana during the 60s and the 70s?
Well, I think that this is a fascinating question and also a very complex question. If we think about the thousands of individuals who would have been drawn up into the movimiento, we can first point to high school students and college students, many of them whose parents had grown up in the United States, some of them whose parents or relatives had fought in either World War I or mostly World War II, and they felt very much a part of the country. And at the same time, they would have noticed the lack of opportunity, the inequities that they and their parents and their extended family members and neighbors would have experienced, whether it was in regards to access to education, quality employment, health care, housing. And so these are people who would have been very motivated to create change. But also the Chicana and Chicano movement was made up of older adults, people who had been involved in neighborhood associations, people who had been involved in unions, and they were also drawn to a lot of the vibrancy and activism of the youth. So it wasn't only the youth. They were a critical factor. They were the igniting factor. And we can say that about many social movements today. But they drew in large numbers of working people, middle class people, who were interested in really creating change socially.
Where they were living.
So the Chicano-Chicano movement, for the most part, has been studied in the region of the U.S. Southwest. But really, there was a national movement. So we would see activism in the Midwest. We would also see activisms on the East Coast. And geography and region do play a role in terms of the kinds of activisms, the momentums for activisms, the kinds of agendas, and the kinds of relationships and associations that were being built. On the East Coast, you would see a lot more sort of pan-Latino organizing taking place.
What is a pan-Latino?
What I mean here
Amari
is
pan latina.
you would see more involvement of Puerto Rican, even Cuban, even South American activists with Mexican activists who would have been smaller in number. But certainly there were alliances and solidarities being built, especially in the area of labor organizing. In the U.S. Southwest, certainly because of the demographics, Mexican descent peoples and Mexicans generally were a big part of the Chicana-Chicano movement. And that had to do with both the proximity of the U.S.-Mexico border, the fact that Mexican populations were moving back and forth, and they were just the largest population. So you would have seen, you know, more Mexicans, but there were Latinos, other Latino activists involved, especially in California. So there were even Afro-Latinos who were advocating mm-hmm. for courses on Afro-Latino populations and cultures in areas of Northern California, for instance. So the Chicana-Chicano movement was very diverse and it was very complex. And though we often do have an emphasis on Mexican and Mexican-American organizers, if you were to talk to people today, there were other Latinos, there were white allies, there were, of course, African-American allies, and Asian and Asian-American allies who played a really critical role in supporting the social justice struggles by Chicanas and Chicanos.
Which were the main rights they were fighting for?
So the Chicana-Chicano movement really is not one sort of monolithic movement. It really is made up of a series of interrelated and also conflictual efforts for basic equity. So this included employment, access to employment opportunities, to quality education. It also involved access to health care, access to social services. Women's rights, you know, becomes a critical marker of the Chicana and Chicano movement. You also had efforts around electoral politics. I think I mentioned this, but welfare rights, also prisoners' rights. So it really was made up of many, many, many constituencies organizing for equities at all levels of society.
We're going to share with Irene Vasquez a little touch of music of this movement, and we'll be right back asking her if there is a milestone that she could highlight. I think there is something regarding Albuquerque.
Yo canto porque el presente no es de pena ni es de llanto. Por eso es que cuando canto, canto lo que el pueblo siente. Soy del pueblo, pueblo soy, y a donde me lleve el pueblo voy.
Como cantar es mi oficio,
yo canto el esfuerzo duro de construir el futuro.
With Irene Vasquez, the author of this amazing book, Making Aztlan, and about the Chicana and Chicano movement. And we were just talking, there is something that it's related in this movement, maybe more than something, that was taking place in Albuquerque. What was that? I think it was something related with equal employment or something like that. What happened? There was a basta thing.
So in March of 1966, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission meeting was scheduled to be held. And there were a number of activists nationwide who were petitioning the U.S. Federal government to be more proactive in terms of promoting Mexicans and Latinos for positions in the federal government, as well as improving employment opportunities in a variety of sectors. And people worked very hard to host this EEOC commission meeting. And what happened was, prior to the start of the meeting, many of the activists learned that there weren't going to be any sort of higher level representatives from the federal government. The conversations that were taking place didn't seem to really address some of the more some of the critical concerns that more progressive activists had. They really wanted to see outcomes come out of this meeting, specific efforts, specific positions that would be implemented. And there was a sense that it really was a sort of token commission meeting. It didn't have the weight of or support, right, of higher level federal officials, and in particular the president. And the activists had enough, and many of them yelled out basta, basta, and they walked out. There was some attention paid to this in the media, and subsequently, as a result, there were some apologies issued, and Graciela Olivares from Arizona was actually appointed to serve on the commission. She was the first Latina, and that was very important. In some ways, people remained critical. They didn't feel like enough had been done. But I think it's interesting that, in fact, a woman was selected for the position, and I think it speaks to the agency and commitment of Chicanas to play an active role in.
Was this happening in the early six in the 60s? Something.
This meeting happened in 1966.
Wow, this is. Yes. Whole avant-garde regarding the feminist movement as well was linking with that, I guess. So going to that, we have many voices here. Is there any other milestone that you want to highlight from this movement? There are so many in your book, but that we can share with our listeners about this movement?
Absolutely, and if we think about Albuquerque, or if we think about New Mexico generally, this was a very strong area for activism on the part of different people of color, but of course Mexicans and Latinos. But at UNM in particular, you know, as a result of the activisms on the part of union organizers, as well as the land grants rights movement in New Mexico, and then the student movement, you had a situation which I think is extremely unique in many ways, in that the UNM administration agreed to establish a Mexican-American studies program or a Chicano studies program. At other universities, you know, students had to organize for several years to sway, right, the administration to agree, and the faculty, because faculty at any university play a role in that. But at UNM, the story was very different. At Highlands, there was a lot of contention around the establishment of Chicana and Chicano studies. But at UNM, it was very different. So you had activists like Felipe Gonzalez, who later served in higher administration at UNM, who was actually an undergraduate student, who wrote the proposal for a Chicano studies program in conjunction with people who would have been involved in UMAS, or what we think of as Mecha today, as well as in conversation with local community organizations. And of course, the Black Beret was also an influential force in building support for Chicana and Chicano studies. So at the time that they present the proposal, it's accepted and it's established, and you have Chicana and Chicano studies as a formal program at UNM established in 1970.
Well, more or less the same time as this radio show. I guess we were having at that time some friends in the same field.
But I did want to add one additional thing, and that is that Chicano women were instrumental as well, although they have not been given the credit, right, that they certainly deserve for building the support and for building a process for asking for Chicana and Chicano studies. And an example of that is the La Chicana course, which was put together by Beva Sanchez Padilla, who's a important feminist and environmental justice activist in the Albuquerque area. She put together the syllabus for La Chicana course and actually faced some resistance in getting it implemented. And eventually the course was offered through Women's Studies. So that also speaks to, you know, the tensions that I mentioned earlier, that the movement is not one movement, and their intention and conflict were dynamics that characterized the movement.
We're going to talk just after this musical cut also about Rolas de Aztlán from the Rolas de Aztlán album. Especially, we want to talk about why is this book in a gerund tense, making, haciendo Aztlán, and especially the Chicanas in this movement. We'll be back.
Por mi madre yo soy mexicano, por destino soy americano, yo soy de la raza de oro, yo soy México-americano.
We are with Irene Vázquez with this book, Making Aztlán, and one of the things we are wondering, and the last song, well, the last question will be also regarding if this movement is still alive, this Chicano movement. But before that, the title of the book is Making Aztlán, Haciendo Aztlán. Is you choose a gerund tense of the verb, like if it's something in process. Why is that? And the other thing, why is beginning by Chicana and Chicano women as a part of this movement?
Well, I'll give away one secret here. Actually, what we had proposed was Aztlán making, which is just the two words, right? Reverse. But there was a very conscious effort to present the movement as something fluid. If you read the book, of course, part of the argument is that there was this period of high intense activism that occurs for about 10 years. And there's always a big discussion about, did it come to an end or not? And in our case, at least what we argue is that it's really more of a fragmentation. You don't have the kind of large national convenings of activisms that take place like you did, right, in that period from 1966 to 1977. But people still remain active. And in fact, you know, there's also criticisms about the ways in which people measure social movements. But I think some of the really critical work actually continues into the 70s and even into the 80s. And in fact, you know, during the 80s, you know, this was considered a sort of period of retrenchment, right, for the kinds of victories that many activists, not just Chicanos, but across the board, achieved in the late 60s and in early 70s. But it was also a period of more inclusiveness in regards to considering women's rights and considering LGBTQ rights, and people who had been involved in the movement went on to create, you know, many, many community-based organizations that did really critical work in regards to education, as well as prisoners' rights.
Can
so it's
give
not
some example of those movements or those local or just one or two examples?
Well, in Los Angeles, out of the Brown Berets and out of efforts made by Chicana rights activists, you had the development of Altamed, which is, you know, one of the, considered to be one of the most successful nonprofit medical services providers for low-income and elderly people. And so what you see is that people who were very much active on a day-to-day level, out on the streets, organizing for change, they continue this activism within institutions, within community-based organizations. Another more local example would be the YDI in Albuquerque, which is something that grew out of the efforts by Chicana and Chicano activists. So you see a sort of institutionalization, and that's very important. So the book certainly says that the activism changes and shifts, but I think the Chicana and Chicano movement still resonates very much with our youth and with communities today. And I see that at UNM all the time. I see the children of Chicana and Chicano movement activists who come into campus, who have a very strong sense of self, a very strong sense of their identity, and understanding that their parents' generation did change things for the better. Of course, there's still a lot of issues that Latino communities are facing today that that were problems in the 1960s. So in some ways things changed, and in other ways they didn't.
We are struggling for the same things.
Exactly.
And how about these women that were during the 60s and 70s? We know Dolores Huerta. But I guess there is even more than that leadership so strong among women. How were Chicanas in this movement?
Well, Chicanas were involved in every sector of the Chicana and Chicano movement. And while it is certainly the case that we tend to know more about the figures that in some way intersect with the national and the international, but on a local level, here in New Mexico, you had a number of Chicana activists. Nancy Montañez, who was an undergrad at UNM, who helped build Chicana and Chicano studies and later went to Colorado to do agricultural worker organizing and meatpacking worker organizing. She now works for a city councilwoman and has been continually active in terms of pressing for education for youth. Maria Varela, who was involved initially in the land grants movement, who went on to work with rural workers and pressing for environmental justice.
There's a tattoo hard with a narrow through the middle of a name that looks like Joe. And the young girl looking at her makeup in the mirror with a little gold ring on her toe. I gotta say one, two, three more things before I go on.
You are the director of Chicana and Chicano Studies at the University of New Mexico, a woman. Congratulations for that. I think our university still needs to work on these topics and to have more leadership from Latino populations. Hopefully it's working on it. And to ask you a personal question, is this identity as Chicana or Chicano still alive in our everyday life?
Yes, I definitely think so. And recently we had the group Las Cafeteras come and perform at UNM. And the themes that they were addressing that dealt with a positive identity in relation to one's maternal culture, one's maternal language, the area in which a young person grows up, their communal and family bonds, that all of those elements are very important in one's identity. And so for Chicanas and Chicanos, the fact that Mexico is so close, that they have relatives on both sides of the border, that's a very important part in shaping who a person is. And though my children, you know, are actually second generation in the United States, they understand that being of Mexican descent is something to be proud of, And at the same time, the younger Chicanas and Chicanos of today are really creating a much more inclusive identity. So they're concerned about women's rights. They're concerned about immigrants' rights. They're concerned about the quality of life for people of color. They're concerned about world peace. And this is all evident in the work of young artists and young activists, that being Chicana and Chicano doesn't mean that you exclude people or that you discriminate against someone else. But it's really about being more conscious of the past, but also working for a better future.
So there is a future.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Irene Vasquez. I want to thank you, and we want to thank the co-author who is not here, but Juan Gomez Quiñones, and the University of Mexico Press.
Yes, and I'd like to thank the Chicana and Chicano Studies program at UNM, and in particular the students, several of whom helped work on the book, and who were so excited to see it go through press and come out, as well as the staff who played a part, actually, in helping the book come out. And UNM Press, you know, which has been very supportive. All, you know, a book like this is really due to the efforts of many people. And while my co-author and I were really inspired to do something on the Chicana and Chicana movement, we know that our work is really the result of other people's work.
Sí, es como un trabajo hecho a pulmón. Gracias, Irene, por venir a nuestro programa de Espejos de Aztlán.
Gracias, Cristina.
You can't run and try to hide away. Here it comes. Here comes.
And you were listening to Dr. Irene Vasquez from the Chicano and Chicano Studies program from UNM, from the University of New Mexico, and author of this book just released by the UNM Press about Chicana and Chicano, Making Aztlán, about Chicana and Chicano movement, 1966 through 1977. My name is Cristina Bachin. I want also to share some condolences that also one of our listeners was giving us information. Thank you, Jerry Lujan, for this information. We want to send our condolences to the family of Esteban Arellano. He was a member of La Academia de la Nueva Raza, advocate for the rights of water, and we want to share the information about his memorial service that it will take place this Saturday, November the 8th, in Española, and the place is the Vargas Funeral Home, 623 North Railroad Avenue at 10:30 a.m. Thank you so much, and stay tuned, because right now, Luis Head, and also a particular topic, La Santolina.